Hey, good afternoon. Welcome to Jays Talk Plus. I am Blake Murphy. As explained yesterday, a couple of season preview podcasts only episodes for you here. We will be Thursday live as well, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. On all your Sportsnet channels as we gear up for Toronto Blue Jays opening day on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Very excited. Jays Talk Plus is back officially April 18th, but we will have plenty of episodes for you in the in-between, both live and podcast only, as well as, of course, your usual Jays Talk post-game with Blair and Barker, or pre- and post-game for certain games with Sho Ali. Today is kind of part two of an unofficial season preview Jays Talk Plus podcast. Joining me from MLB.com, Mr. Florida himself, the man who has usurped Hulk Hogan as most synonymous with Florida. It's Keegan Matheson. Keegan, what's up, buddy? How you doing?
I'm doing well, Blake. I'm happy to be here. Happy to be almost leaving Florida. It's all coming together. Every year I'm so excited to get here. And then I'm aware I have no sympathy complaining about being in Florida in a snowy Toronto weather, but I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. And at this point, I don't care if it's a train or not. It's a light.
And yeah, look, for you to say this as someone who enjoys the Tropicana field trips and enjoys spring training more than most says a lot. It's partially that, you know, spring training 7 weeks long. You also got like a little Florida reprieve on the weekend. You were out in BC where you get the mountains. And I guess Florida has some ocean as well, but not doesn't quite hit the same as the mountains, I suppose.
No, it needs to be cold ocean. You know, it needs to be a little rough for me. That was actually my first time outside of the Vancouver airports. I've been an East Coast purist up until that point. So it was great. It was one of my college buddies' weddings out in Vancouver. Now, I wish I could go back and speak to like January Keegan, who booked this trip, and maybe ask him to consider a little more self-care in the turnaround. But it was successful. Everybody said yes. Everybody's happy. It was a beautiful time.
And now you've got 2 days off between the end of the Toronto Blue Jays spring training schedule, which was Monday, and the start of the Toronto Blue Jays regular season schedule, which is Thursday, and you've decided to burn one of those days talking to me. So I appreciate that. I guess big picture, I want to drill down on a lot of stuff from spring. You know, I did a lot of the main roster stuff with Ben Nicholson Smith yesterday. Want to talk to you about some of the prospect guys you had eyes on over the course of spring training, what the kind of depth outside of the 26 man might look like this season. But before we get into that big picture, spring is behind us now. How are you feeling heading into this Jays regular season?
Boy, about the team or my life? Those could be two very different answers, but with the team,
I feel like the life answer, you know, we need to get brown beverage in hand to really go deep on that
more
one.
Professionals.
Yeah.
But I feel so similar to this time last year, which may not be a good thing. This roster is very similar, and I think what we have seen in camp, Blake, is something that I believe we talked about a couple of times over the offseason, which is that the entire presumption that internal improvements would help seemed to oddly ignore the likelihood that injuries would happen. It seemed to exist in this universe where the rotation was going to do the exact same thing, and credit to those starters, credit to the training staff. I always want to say that, but luck is going to catch you eventually. Go click on the 2017 or 14 Blue Jays. You're going to see four starting pitchers you don't remember at all. It's going to happen. And we're seeing that this spring. We're seeing what the reality of injuries in just a normal season look like. It feels bad, but really it's just average, the number of injuries the Blue Jays are dealing with. Nobody's undergone Tommy John or blown a knee. A lot of teams are dealing with that. I think we're seeing that this goes both ways. And yeah, there have been changes. Brandon Belt turns into Justin Turner. Whit Merrifield turns into Isaiah Kiner-Falefa and a permanent Davis Schneider. Kevin Kiermaier turns into himself. There's some tinkering. But I think this is a pretty similar team that is dealing with a more realistic dose of injuries. Now, their depth has improved. I like their depth a bit more. But if you're going to have another injury on top of what they're already dealing with, that's when it gets into the scarier depth. That's when you're looking towards the edges of your 40-man roster. And especially starting early, Blake, it's early for me to be an alarmist, but I think the last few years have been a very good lesson on how much division games and tiebreakers matter So right off the top, Tampa, Houston, New York, I don't care if it's April or the end of March. When you are missing guys early in the season, these are big division games or AL, you know, potential wildcard games that could break things 6 months from now. We could be looking back to these days. So you're seeing the urgency of injuries and reality kind of knocking all at once, and it can get scary quickly.
Yeah, and urgency is a great word for it, because I think that should be kind of the key word for this entire season when you look at the Blue Jays' competitive window here ahead of potential free agency for Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr., when you look at the age of some of these free agent spends that they've brought in to support around that, and the fact that, you know, 3-4 years ago, I would have said the plan here is probably, well, while Bo and Vlad and Manoah and those guys are inexpensive on their way through controllability in our beers, well, then you spend on veteran free agents. And then when your internal guys become successful, the next wave of competitiveness is, well, you have a good farm system to provide, you know, inexpensive support of those guys. Okay, Bo and Vlad and Manoah are your guys who are more expensive now, but you've got the next wave. But when you look at the Blue Jays in general, and especially compared to the American League East, their farm system does not stack up as well. So I don't know. Are you look, it's 2 years before Bichette and Vlad can reach free agency. You know, Gausman, Bassett, Berríos, Springer, all those guys have term left on their deals. But this kind of feels like it's not make or break, because you could still run it back in 2025 and justify that. But it really does feel like there has to be a significant step forward in outcome here, even though on paper this team is maybe a little less spicy at the high end of the potential outcomes than they were this time a year ago.
Yeah, something needs to happen. If the same thing happens again, then you're teetering on the edge of insanity at this point. It's been so similar year after year. Something different needs to happen, and it very well could. But I think given the context of recent years, it needs to. It absolutely has to at this point. And there can be a very quick off-ramp for this organization to take if they want. If things go poorly, man, you can rip that wheel to the right and take an off-ramp very quickly. But you can also hammer it down this highway and do this one more year at least. And I think on the minor league side, Blake, I don't remember a year even close to this important on the farm system side. Last year was not a good year, period. Injuries, poor performance, just not a good year for the Blue Jays farm system. This is an incredibly important year. They need a couple of success stories. They need top-end success stories. This farm system's actually done a good job of those Davis Schneider types, the Horwitzes, getting some mid-level guys to support a roster. But you need stars. And this is the year the Blue Jays need that to start happening on the minor league side, either to extend the window, because the beauty of prospects is not only are they good, they're cheap, they allow you to spend money elsewhere, but you can also use those in trades to extend this window or really load up for next year. If the Blue Jays are in the trade market right now, yeah, they can get mid-level stuff done, low-end stuff done, anybody can. But if you are pushing up against a deadline, like the trade deadline, and trying to go up against other clubs, that's when you might lose. That is when the team trading a player is looking at your organization and the Orioles side by side and saying, oh boy, we can get way more out of the Orioles. Easy. So this organization really needs a big year from that farm system. I think that's absolutely crucial, because regardless of what happens at the big league level, you need some sort of foundation, and that's not the strongest right now.
So let's start then going a little deeper on the minor league side. And again, yesterday, if you missed it, we kind of went into the 26-man decisions, even some of the 40-man fringe decisions, because the Blue Jays do have to clear a 40-man spot as things currently stand. But Keegan, let's go a little deeper. So I guess first, you know, you spend a lot of time in spring training, and some of these guys don't get into spring games or don't get much sample in spring games, but you're having conversations, you're seeing the minor league games or the intra-squad games at times, you're certainly talking to a lot of people, maybe even seeing some of the individual work guys are doing. Who popped to you this spring? And this can be at the major league level if you prefer, but I remember, for example, last year around this time, you were pretty high on a guy like Davis Schneider. Are there guys who kind of popped to you over the last 7 weeks or so?
Yeah, that's the fun part of camp, because you get to see them up close. Some of them, like the Tiedemanns, Martinezes, you see in games. But certainly late in camp, when even I am getting bored, I love to wander over to the backfields, the minor league fields. And it's another reason, Blake, that I'm very glad that at MLB.com and Pipeline, and I'm not a automatic company man, but this is something I genuinely like, that we do our prospect list a little later than average. We put ours out in early mid-March a couple of weeks ago, after I've actually had a chance to see these guys and talk to people who are around them who are smarter than me, which is the most important part of all of this. And I'm just looking down our top 30 right now. And, you know, Tiedemann has had his year, and that's always the example I remember, Blake. It was 2 years ago, I think, because Tiedemann had been drafted the year prior, didn't pitch. And I remember showing up, and Pete Walker was one of these people. And then there was another coach who came up to me on day one and day two saying, "Have you seen Ricky Tiedemann? You've got to see Ricky Tiedemann." And my answer was, "I don't care. He's a third rounder from a junior college. Like, I've got better stuff to do. I've got to talk to Vladdy." Like, all due respect, I respect your opinion, but man, I've got better stuff to do right now. I was wrong, completely wrong. And that was the year Tiedemann exploded. So for me, it is all about what other people care about. I can tell a good breaking ball from a bad breaking ball, but I can't do it with the level of fineness that experts can. So walking around those backfields, number one, I think you get a feel for the physical growth of these young players, because these are guys going from age 16, 17, 18, 19, and they're putting on weight. They're growing. I think of the first time that I saw Emmanuel Bonilla, the international signing from just a couple of years ago, and I think I wrote this in his profile. We have him as the number 8, an outfielder with just incredible talent to dream on. His prospect photo on our website is of a child. He is baby-faced. He looks barely 16. And I had a couple of people tell me, "You've got to see this guy. He's got a Rick Ross beard. He's got braids. He bulked up." And it's one of my favorite moments each spring when somebody will point at a prospect and tell me who it is. And I realize that I've been watching him for two rounds of BP and I had no clue. And that was Bonilla this spring. This guy is suddenly a man. Relvis Martinez kind of had that recently, where he went from a boy to a man's build. Arjun Namala was another exciting one for me, too. He's our number 3. I know it's a prospect that everybody knows, but he almost – I've compared his build to almost like an Olympic swimmer, Blake. He's got the broad shoulders down to like a slim, muscular build. Like, he's such an impressive athlete and such an impressive young man as well. Like, getting a feel for who these guys are around the complex when you look at that. Then there's always some surprises as well. CJ Van Eyck, who's a guy who's missed a lot of time. I got as many positive comments about CJ Van Eyck as anyone. I think he could have some really cool kind of chaotic reliever energy. Like, he seems to fit it. And that's the benefit of talking to some of these guys. It's sometimes you come away from a conversation and you can just picture a man sprinting in at 100 miles an hour, gritting his teeth, ready to throw a billion miles an hour. You know, it's been an interesting spring that's left me a little more optimistic about this system than I was coming in. A lot of stuff still needs to happen, but I think you're starting to see some of the benefits of that complex, of the development. Another name in that is Landon Marutis, the right-handed pitcher. Mm-hmm. I think guys like that, and then when you get to Bonilla and Namala, just to tie those guys together, these are teenagers coming into that complex. The old complex sucked. I didn't work much there, but I saw it for a couple of years. You weren't getting much benefit from it. Now, if you're bringing a 17, 18-year-old kid into this complex and this competitive environment, that's where you're going to see the payoff. It's not going to happen with every guy. You've got to buy in. And for every positive thing I'm saying right now, Blake, there's stories I've heard of, this guy didn't really buy in. That's going to happen. But if you turn one of these teenagers into a superstar by taking a physical jump like Ricky Tiedemann did, boom, complex pays for itself immediately. And I think these young guys who are spending all of their time there, that's where you got to look.
And that's where, you know, maybe this discussion of, well, hey, is there urgency in this window, or can that window extend, and are the next wave of prospects ready? That's where, you know, the upside is what dictates that. No one's going to say, I don't think, the window's wide open because you've got a bunch of quad A utility infield prospects ready to go through AAA and AA. But if suddenly a Tiedemann looks like an ace, a Namala's quicker through the minors than maybe you anticipate, and maybe Namala and Benier are too young because they're 18, they're probably going to start this season at rookie ball and stuff. But you know, you get into the Tucker Thoman, who's 20, you know, Landon Marutis, I think, is 19, but had a little experience behind him. You know, those kind of guys, if a year and a half from now, they're looking like they're on the radar, maybe that changes your thinking a little bit. So let's focus a little closer to the majors. Those guys are very exciting to think on and track in rookie league and complex league and things like that. More immediately, last year, there were two guys who, in what was at that point a thinner system at the top, were able to contribute at the major league level. And those were David Schneider, who was probably the single biggest highlight of the season. That Red Sox series was maybe the most fun we all had all year. And then Bowden Francis, who now is going to start the season in the rotation after working as kind of a swingman between AAA and the majors last year. Are there, at the higher levels of the minors, versions of David Schneider or Bowden Francis ready over the course of the next 6 months, or maybe not ready right now, but who you think could be ready over the course of the next 6 months?
Yeah, the pitching side feels a little tougher here. I don't feel like there's that real wave of starting talent or even just bulk talent. I think you look at Chad Dallas, we have him as our number 15. He certainly did himself a lot of favors this spring and has a little more physical upside than I expected. He's not a big built guy, but he's not just a finesse guy either. And he has a very deep arsenal and very good control of his breaking balls, good feel for those breaking balls. So I think that Chad Dallas is, frankly, the type of pitcher that this organization needs to develop more consistently. He's not the Tiedemann, the next ace of the team, but when you look back through the recent years, Blake, you think of Thomas Hatch, Anthony Kay, on and on, all of these pitchers who felt like the number six or seven, but never really consistently stepped in and provided that. That's so valuable to have in your prospect system, and it makes your 40-man management much simpler. So I think Chad Dallas is the closest you're going to see to that option this year. And I'm excited to see him in AAA. I think he is a guy who's maybe not getting quite enough attention because nothing is sexy. It's not the sexy high 99 fastball. But number one, Blake, the name, Chad Dallas, very pitchery. I remember he walked in for his first start of the spring wearing a strong mustache, number one, but a vintage Dale Earnhardt number three shirt, the Intimidator. And I was a huge Dale Earnhardt kid growing up, back when I was still very Nova Scotian instead of just a little bit. And the whole vibe with him is pretty interesting. And if we're comparing to Bowden Francis, the absolute vibe king, then Chad Dallas. Now, on the position player side, you have kind of that logjam of talent up top with Aurelvis Martinez, Leo Jimenez, Addison Barger. Aurelvis Martinez's power, outside of Vladdy, is as good as there is in the system, I think, period. And Martinez could be that 40-homer guy. He could be the 700-strikeout guy. But I think his plate approach has really improved at this point. One of my favorite conversations this spring was speaking to Edwin Encarnacion about Aurelvis. And he was saying Aurelvis has more talent than Hanley Ramirez did at this point, because that's the old comp that Vladdy made. And, of course, I do look at that and say Hanley was winning Rookie of the Year, 50 stolen bases, 833 OPS. Maybe that's a little strong, but the talent is really, really there. And I've seen the maturity from Aurelvis Martinez, and which, Blake, is something that I value way more with each passing year. Is this guy mature? Is he an idiot? If he is an idiot, is it the right kind that can still work on a baseball field? The brain is such an important part of this, which I've always known, but I think I understand it a bit more from being around these player development people who talk about it, but also former players, whether they're in the media or around the game, just kind of wrapping my head around how that factors in and that kind of leap in maturation. And I've seen some of that from Arelvis. It's very encouraging. Jimenez is a guy I don't think gets enough attention because, again, like Chad Dallas, it's not the sexiest, but he's a big league shortstop. If he can hit, maybe there's a job for him there. Barger is going to be your wow factor. Maybe he strikes out a few times. Maybe he hits the furthest home run you've ever seen and gives you that Brett Laurie Red Bull experience you've been craving for years and years. It's in there. I think Damiano Palmigiani is the Schneider.
Okay.
And I really like Palmigiani. Like the player, really like the person. Very impressive young man. I think him at third base is a little better than most of the public reports that I had read. A lot of folks around the Blue Jays think he's better there than he publicly gets credit for. It's not Matt Chapman, but I think he can stick there, along with playing some first base and some left field. If he can play a bit of left field, I think that's really important. And I asked him about that. Listen, Blake, I'm down here for a long time. Yeah. I ask bad questions. I asked him, like, well, left field, is that, you know, is that comfortable? And very respectfully, he said, no, I played it a lot in my life. It's, you know, I just not in the minor leagues. And I said, okay, of course, it's still a position on a baseball diamond. You're familiar with it. And if Damiano can play some left field competently, that opens up a lot of stuff because I try to think, Blake, down the road in terms of realistically how any of these guys could get onto the roster. Arelvis is the talent who could kick the door down all by himself. Someone like Jimenez would probably need an injury, probably at shortstop or second base, middle infield, given his defensive acumen. But I don't know if he has that tool that's going to leave the Blue Jays looking at him and saying, damn, we need to make a big, surprising decision to get this guy on the roster. It's not a criticism of him, but just the type of player he is. I think he'll have a big league career, but it might require an opening. When you look down at Palmigiani, he is the guy who can crush left-handed pitching and hit for power, which are two very important things to do. And it makes you more than just depth for the sake of depth. Depth for the sake of depth gets you to the wild card. Who cares? You need to do something that raises the ceiling. And I think Palmigiani can do that. He would be up there with Martinez for my best bet to lead the system in home runs this year. I think his power is legitimate. His home run off of Ryan Borucki just the other day, I think, was 428. It was a beautiful swing. Palmigiani makes a lot of sense as that. He's kind of that development success story who was not a first rounder by any means, but I think really fits the definition of that Davis Schneider type who can come up. And what made Schneider special was the power. This team needed more power last year. I don't care how much the narrative tried to change about, you know, moving guys over and not needing power. They needed power. They absolutely did. And I think Palmigiani is a guy who can kind of inject some of that if you're looking below the Arelvis Martinez tier.
Just to go back to Arelvis for 1 second, we saw him late last year shift over to second base. He'd primarily been shortstop and third base in his early part of the minors. I think I only saw him in at second base. Maybe he played somewhere else in a game I wasn't locked in on. Are they pretty much considering him a second baseman moving forward now?
I think he's a second baseman.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's... I feel like, Blake, over the years, I've learned to interpret the language people use around this when they say, but we're also going to use him here. We're also going to make sure he's that. Those things kind of mean something. Yeah, he's going to play a bit of third, a bit of shortstop. Yeah. I think second base makes a ton of sense for him as that power-hitting second baseman who has a little bit of a simpler throwing motion, maybe than third base. His arm is strong. It wasn't always the most accurate. And at second base, you know, hopefully he's able to get to balls a little bit more as his body continues to fill out, as he continues to grow, because he still will a little bit. And players don't get any faster as they age, typically. But I think second base for Martinez, and I like that for him. I like the idea of that stout, power-hitting second baseman. I think that's a beautiful archetype player. I grew up like a Dan Uggla man. You know, I like the power hitting second baseman.
Yeah, of course. And look, lots of the listeners play fantasy too, so that becomes a super premium weapon there if you've got a second baseman who can really hit the long ball. So some interesting options there at the high level of the minors. You know, starting pitching depth. We'll see where Yariel Rodriguez ends up. What the Alek Manoah status is. Actually, do you? By the way, while I mentioned the starting pitching depth, do you have a sense of what next steps are for Manoah, or what kind of timeline we might be looking at here when we look at, you know, hey, Bowden's the number five right now, but behind him there are a few question marks.
Yeah, I think at this point they want Manoah to be getting into quote unquote game action soon, but that's going to have to look like a minor league game down here. It's going to be kind of a hybrid extended spring training slash rehab assignments, which I think thankfully and in a good way for both him and the Blue Jays creates a lot of flexibility where you don't have to rush things. You can take this a little more carefully because clearly in that first spring outing, he cranked it up. He was trying to show this velocity and, you know, next day the shoulder is sore. Behind Bowden Francis, Blake, I think that Manoah needs to, number one, get healthy. Then I think he needs to win a job, like, period. I don't think he's walking back into this. And I'm also really high on Bowden Francis. Excuse me. I think Bowden Francis is really good. I think that on a lot of MLB teams, he's more than just a number five. And unless another injury hits this rotation, like I think that Manoah, even when he's healthy, he needs to actually win a job back. I don't think it's the same world he's stepping into that we were in, let's say, 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, and I think that's fair, and I think I'm with you on that. I'm likewise quite high on Bowden Francis. There's also the Yariel Rodriguez factor. There are some other names. Wes Parsons is on the 40-man and can kind of be a multi-inning reliever or starting pitching depth in an emergency. The Paolo Espino story's been nice. The sweeper's getting tons of movement in spring training. No idea if he factors in at some point. Yariel Rodriguez is the other question mark. We've heard from the Blue Jays that they want to get him about 100 innings this year after not pitching in competitive baseball all of last year outside of the World Baseball Classic. How would you deploy Yariel Rodriguez this year for those 100 innings, and how do you anticipate them using Yariel Rodriguez, whether at AAA or the major league level?
Yeah, he's the X factor in all of this, and Rodriguez was my favorite move of the offseason. Number one, because of the contract, I think it's good. But there's upside. There's upside in this. You know, when you were adding a Kiner Falefa, Turner, bringing back Kiermaier, I like all of those players for different reasons. And, of course, it's all relative to contracts. Those players all have big league jobs for a reason. But they were more securing keeping this roster moving forward at this pace. Rodriguez is a guy who can raise the ceiling, I think. And now that I think of it in the moment, Blake, I would kind of have Rodriguez on a Ricky Tiedemann plan, very similar to a prospect, where you are starting out in, yeah, maybe it's a bit of a hybrid role, even kind of a plan they started Tiedemann on last year, which is getting in that 3 to 4 inning range out of the gate. Maybe you're getting an extra day of rest every time through the rotation. Where that leaves you by the end of April is maybe 20 innings. You can go into May 25, 30. So you're getting on a bit of a schedule, but you are still leaving quite a bit in the tank the rest of the way. Now, last year, Tiedemann got injured. We didn't get to see that reality play out. But I think that I kind of view Rodriguez as an older, very polished prospect for the Blue Jays. And yesterday when Schneider spoke about him, he said that in a perfect world, you keep him on a schedule. You try to get this guy into a normal schedule. Now, injuries in the bullpen are making it pretty tempting to yank him into that bullpen because he can do a lot of things. He can start, but he can also be a back-end guy. We've seen him do that successfully. But looking ahead to next year, Kikuchi is gone. Who's Alek Manoah next year? I don't know. Will there be injuries elsewhere? Maybe. So having Rodriguez built up as a regular, normal starter where this conversation doesn't exist by next year, I think has to be the priority. It's just about how you get value in the middle, which brings me back to the kind of prospect buildup. I think you treat him as a bit of a hybrid earlier in the year. And by, you know, a month from now, 6 weeks from now, then you'll have a good sense. Is your bullpen completely on fire, okay, Rodriguez can shorten up. But if things are a little better, okay, continue down that path. Let him be the bulk guy. Maybe you slide him into that bullpen as a long reliever. But getting him up to that 100, 110, I think would be really ideal. I think everybody would be happy.
Yeah, and I think that's why you sign him to a five-year deal, right? You're trying to maximize what that five-year window looks like, not necessarily just 1 year. But like you said, if it's a win-now situation, it's an emergency situation, he is there and could probably contribute at the major league level in some role. In that bullpen, Keegan, it looks like Romano and Swanson are going to start the season on the IL. That means we're down to five guys who were kind of locks for the pen in Jimmy Garcia, Tim Mesa, Chad Green, Trevor Richards, and Mitch White, who has had a good spring in addition to not having options. Do you have a lean on where those final two bullpen spots might go? And we might even find this out by the time this podcast comes out. But those final two spots in the bullpen, if Romano and Swanson are starting the season on the IL?
Yeah, this is a tough one because you start to see, like we mentioned up at top, Blake, you start to see how quickly the edges of a 40-man roster can creep up on you.
Yes.
40-man sounds so big. And the last couple of years, this hasn't been a problem. Like the 40-man roster, it seems like this massive sprawling thing where there are players for miles. No, it can get really tough really quick. And when you look at this 40-man now, you can eliminate a few guys off the top. Yosfer Zulueta, no. Adam Macko, no. Hagen Danner, I don't believe will be that. Brendan Little, maybe, but as a lefty, you've already got two of them.
That and Mason Flaherty, who might be, you know, next prospect up in the bullpen.
Definitely. And then you look at Nate Pearson. I guess this is another life for Nate Pearson, I think. The upside, I mean, if I've covered seven spring trainings, I've spent 12 of them writing about Nate Pearson. I know, I get it. Half of those stories people complain about have been my stories, I know. But Nate Pearson at least has that upside. I would still bet that sometime, someday, somewhere, Nate Pearson's going to have a real good season as a reliever. Maybe that happens this year. Maybe it's 5 years from now with the Rays when he has a beard down to his shoulders. I don't know. But the upside is still tantalizing. It's still there. He can still do special things with the baseball. This might open the door again for Zach Pop. He hasn't had the best spring, but he did start last year pretty good until I believe it was that hamstring injury that kind of lingered and lingered through the year. But then when you look past that, Blake, there's not much left on the 40-man. Wes Parsons is a guy that I've had brought up to me a surprising number of times in spring training. It's kind of my favorite question just to ask people around, like, hey, who should I talk about more? Like, who am I not focusing on? A few people have said Wes Parsons, and I look at them like, wow. His stuff has looked better. If you need a long man, no problem. Wes Parsons is on the roster. But this does feel like a situation, Blake, where, and again, if this is resolved by the time this comes out, we'll dub it over, make ourselves sound smart. But when you're getting down to Zach Pop and beyond, that's probably also when you're starting to look off your own 40-man roster and externally outside of the organization on the waiver wire as well.
Yeah, and look, Wes Parsons, for a guy from Tennessee, that's a nice East Coast Canadian last name, so we could at least have that going for us. So outside the organization is an option. Now, you could go off your own 40-man. I don't think they'll do this for the initial bullpen, but I did want to ask you in terms of, hey, this is a long season. There are going to be IL stints. There will be 40-man churn, especially in the bullpen. Who's on your radar as potential relief depth down the line? We mentioned a couple of the names there who are on the 40-man, but there are a couple of intriguing arms not on the 40-man yet who I wonder if you think could maybe get themselves on it by, hey, August, September.
Yeah, when you look even down the prospect list, I think the Blue Jays are doing a better job now of developing reliever-only players. They, much like other teams, have moved away from everybody has to start. They tried to intentionally develop some bulk relievers like Hayden Yinger, which hasn't really worked the last year. But our number 20 guy, Connor Cook, one of the most exciting pitchers in the organization. Mm-hmm. Now, he's got that ridiculous slider. I'm just clicking on my notes here on this. Blake, I've got a spreadsheet that I think even you would be proud
Hell
of
yeah.
as a purist. There's lots of colors and everything. Best athlete in the system is my first note on him. I remember when the Blue Jays did one of those videos of who could dunk? Everyone said Connor Cook. This is a reliever.
And he's 6'1", that's a good bounce.
It surprises you, but he's a guy that throws 97, 98, and his slider is really, really, really good. Like, it gets MLB hitters out tomorrow. he has, I think, the highest upside out of all of the bullpen prospects. And upside is what you want. You want to find a guy who can give you what Zach Pop did for a month last year. Those 15, 20 really good innings. Yeah, you love having Swanson, Romano, Garcia, these guys. A lot of being a good bullpen is finding guys and knowing when to bet on them at the right time and cash out at the right time. Finding 20, 30 innings from someone who's hot. Connor Cook's upside is really exciting when you look at it from that standpoint. Now, going down the other non-roster guys, TJ Brock, his numbers were not good last year, but his stuff is really good. I think he's a guy who could pop this year. Looking down at the Paolo Espino, Mason Fluharty, Hayden Yeager is in there, Mike Mayers, who just came over, but there's not a lot kicking the door down. I think Connor Cook is where I would look first. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, it would be about waiting for the AAA Buffalo season to start. And it's an open competition. Who wants to be the next guy in line? Because there's a pretty big opportunity there.
Yeah, and look, that Bison's team is going to be fascinating for a handful of reasons. We went through the starting pitching. That means those guys are probably going to be down there. You see some Ricky Tiedemann starts. You might see some Manoah rehab starts. You'll see a good bullpen. Maybe a Joey Votto, who it sounds like is going to do an extended spring training before that point. Are you tempted to kick around in Florida and just like see if you can watch Joey Votto do an extended spring training for a few days?
You know what? If there's any reason, it might be that. I don't know if I can handle it, but it's the Joey Votto story has, I think it's one, Blake, that I'll even appreciate more 10 years from now. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I'll look back, maybe 5-6 years from now when we're having a Hall of Fame conversation, and 10, 20 years from now when we talk about, Joey Votto, the great Canadian baseball player. Those early scrums and him talking about trying out for the team, how he's a minor leaguer. Seeing Joey Votto walk into the Blue Jays clubhouse for the first time and look at me, and I forget who I was standing with, I think one of the Blue Jays PR reps, and asking if we knew where his locker was. Like these little moments that are so fascinating for a guy who, for well over a decade, 15 years really at his peak, had the entire city of Cincinnati wrapped around his finger. Like that organization orbited around him. And now he's coming in and approaching this opportunity like this. It's fascinating. I hope it continues to play out. But the stepped on bat was an interesting wrinkle after that first pitch home run.
Yeah, and who knows? Maybe obviously it's not a good thing to be injured, but it does give you the deniability here to slow play this a little bit. Vogelbach makes the team in the interim and things like that. It'll be all right. We'll get a Votto moment at some point. I'm very, very hopeful. And yeah, to your point about looking back on it later, on the Raptors show last week, we had Jamal McGlure on the show, and it's been, 10 years since he became the first Canadian to play for the Toronto Raptors. And it was a bit role at the end of the bench, but it obviously meant a lot to him and the org and the wave of Canadian players that would come after, especially because, he was kind of the Canadian all-star right before Steve Nash really popped off. So obviously Votto in a little bit of a different spot. There have been Canadians who have played for the Blue Jays before, but not, arguably the greatest Canadian player of all time playing for the Blue Jays. So that should be a lot of fun. Keegan, what did you make of the, I didn't want to do too much of this because it's been talked about, but the keeping Vogelbach even as the Votto option potentially looms, given the contract stuff and the fact that, it didn't cost you Nathan Lucas because he's optionable, but it maybe gives you a tiny bit less 26-man maneuverability in-game. That decision from the Blue Jays, what did you make of that side?
I like it, and I know there's a couple million bucks involved. Not my money. I don't care.
It's the Aspinall money.
Yeah. And I was listening to your BNS episode, because not only am I a fan of the show, I'm a BNS fan, of course, as well. And impressive beard. He's had a good spring, I should note for listeners. But you guys touched on the fact that last year's 26th man, what did they even do with it?
Nothing.
Nathan Lucas didn't really get used, barely used. So this is something that you can do. Like, if this was still the era of 25-man rosters, no. Daniel Vogelbach needs to do more. He needs to own a baseball glove. But 26 men, especially when Biggio, Kiner Falefa, Ernie Clement, who I think will play all over and quickly endear himself to Blue Jays fans. I really like Ernie Clement. all of these guys can do so many things. And yes, sometimes I turn into the 60-year-old man who's just exhausted and says, my God, just play one position well. But the beauty of having a lot of guys who are versatile is that you can do something like this and carry another player who does one thing really well, crushes right-handed pitching and hits for power. So because all of these other guys cover a couple of bases or corner outfields, you can carry a Daniel Vogelbach. Now, how many at-bats does he get in April? Is it 30? Is it 25? It's such a small sample that he could either really pop and he's suddenly this cult hero in Toronto, or it could be pinch hitting every 2 or 3 days, which is a tough spot to put anyone in. And by the time Votto's ready, maybe it's an easier decision. But I like it to start. I really do. It gets back to the prospect conversation, Blake, where if you're going to be depth, you got to do something. You can't just be another infielder who plays four positions. That's great, but there's already four of you on the roster. Dan Vogelbach at least does something that can add to a game. And even when he's not in the game, just being on the bench, it can impact how other teams manage because they know he's there. And that power potential, even if he just hits that one pinch hit home run, there's a win. Boom. I know it's not going to equate to, you know, one win above. It's not that simple. But if he can change a game or two, fantastic. That's already way more value and use than they got from the 26 man a year ago.
Certainly. And like you said, with respect to those kind of not redundant, but kind of low replacement level or high replacement level, rather, utility infield. Like, you can always pick up Santiago Espinal for a single A arm that you picked in the 13th round a couple years ago, you know, like that being on the other side of that trade is always, you know, JD Davis was out there for next to nothing for Oakland. Santiago Espinal was out there for next to nothing for Cincinnati. Before we let you go here, Keegan, I do want to now kind of do the opposite of what we've been doing these last 40 minutes and talk about the highest kind of highest value item on the Blue Jays season. And I think when you look at, hey, what is a reasonable expectation? Where is the case for optimism that the Blue Jays will be better, particularly on the offensive side of the ball? A lot of it is going to come down to what kind of season Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has. He went from being a 6+ win player and coming second in MVP voting in 2021 to being a lesser but still mostly effective version of himself in 2022 with a few warning signs there to being in 2023, you know, not a guy that was threatening, not a guy who ever had a sustained hot streak, finished about 18% better than league average at the plate, but played, you know, depending on who you ask and which metric you look at, a subpar first base, and that's a position with a high replacement level. So he's gone from being a 6.5 win player to a 1 win player over the course of 3 years. He had a tremendous spring at the plate. 707 slugging, was on base more than half the time, looked the part coming into spring training. Maybe we don't get back to first half of 2021 Vlad at the dish, but where is your optimism level that Vlad can be closer to the 2021 version than the 2023 version?
Ooh, extremely cautiously above average.
Okay.
How about that for a non-answer? But Vladdy has looked a little more like himself this spring. And I don't care about the baseball side of this. I care about just the guy who's walking around the clubhouse and in the dugouts. And it's taken me a lot of years, Blake, to get a feel for what matters and what doesn't. There's so much value in that in spring training. Seeing which players are tight. There were a couple of young guys who seemed really tight this spring around the clubhouse doing drills. And guess what? They didn't have good camps. They didn't help themselves. Vladdy is looking a little looser again. And that is such an important part of all of this. Vladdy, more than anybody, sometimes I think he would have a better game if he just strolled in at 6:55 wearing flip-flops and stumbled onto the field. Just, there have been so many attempted adjustments and a lot of voices, I think, which gets to the role of the offensive coordinator, simplifying the message through Mattingly, et cetera, et cetera. Last year, I think there were a few more voices in Vladdy's ear. I get to the ballpark one day and look down on the field. His uncle's there watching him take BP. That's not good. That is not a positive thing that you want to see. Now, obviously, you want Vladdy to feel helped and supported in whichever way he needs, but ideally, you get that right on option number one, not 2, 3, 4, 5, uncle on an airplane up to Toronto. So I think the simpler, the better for Vladdy. The simplest path for him to play joyful baseball, and I know this is miles from analytics, but loose, natural, joyful baseball, I think, is so important for Vladdy. Because when he is thinking too much and analyzing too much, you see him taking those swings, and we can all picture it, Blake, outside slider where he misses, big whiff, and finishes with one hand on the bat. That's not Vladdy. And we've seen way too many of those the last couple of years. It's not his natural self, which we saw in 2021 and coming up through the minor leagues, which I'm confident will be the most dominant thing I ever see in baseball, Vladdy in the minor leagues. So if he can get back to that, I think there's a better player in there. Do I think it's 2021? That would surprise me. I think that's a real top 2% outcome here. But if Vladdy can get closer to an 875 OPS hitter with a little more home run power, that would change a lot of things for this team, because that power was missing last year. And if Vladdy had hit 5, 7 more home runs, then Blake, there would have been a couple of days where I'm not writing a story about hitting with runners in scoring position. I'm not writing a story about a dumb error. I'm writing a story that Vladdy hit a ball 450 feet and a 4-3 loss turned into a 5-4 win. A home run can change everything. And Vladdy is that guy. You know, I was talking about this earlier today on a show that right now, Bo Bichette is the player, the face of this franchise, the player that impresses me more than anyone in this team and almost as much as anyone in baseball. Period. I have so much respect for Bichette's game and what he does every day. But nobody can be Vladdy. Vladdy's ceiling, what he's capable of at his absolute peak, changes an organization. We haven't seen it in a long time, and I've got to trust the last 2 years over something that happened 3 years ago. But there's always going to be that 1 or 2% chance it comes back. If it does, it changes everything about the Blue Jays. More realistically, maybe he gets into that 850 to 875 OPS range with fewer empty at-bats and those nice, shiny exit velocity numbers, which are still great, turn into more home runs.
Yeah, and that, look, that OPS, 850 to 875 OPS, that has you in the 12 to 20 range in terms of ranking in Major League Baseball. Yeah. So if you can get back to that, that's still a really, really valuable thing. And I'm glad you made the point, you know, that how we're evaluating Vlad and how you get Vlad back to the peak version of himself goes beyond analytics. And I hope what comes across in Jays Talk Plus is that, yes, we'll talk about the analytics. I want to understand that. I want to know what teams are looking at. I want to understand performance better from that perspective. But there's always a gap between what the numbers tell you to expect or what should have happened and what actually happens. And that's the kind of magic, like that black box is what determines who, maybe not the World Series, because there's a little bit of randomness in there, but that determines, you know, which organizations are the strongest. The Dodgers getting the playoffs 100 years in a row, some of that's budget too. But like that gap between what we expect to see, what we think we should see, and what actually happens is kind of what we're doing here in talking about the team an hour or 2 hours every day, talking about Vlad every day for a couple seasons as he tries to get it back. So, there are the expected stats, the exit velos and things like that. Then there's what happens and the secret sauce in between those things and how to get one to match the other is a big part of this season. Keegan, you're going to be a big part of this season for Jays Talk Plus. I will bug you every single week, and we're back full time in a couple weeks here. So I appreciate you always taking the time out and really looking forward to next Monday, buddy.
I love it. I've got something to look forward to coming back. Something that is outside of baseball, going out to catch some live music, something that's not at a baseball field. The temperature will be my speed. Everything's looking up. I tell you that is the light. You are the light, Blake Murphy, at the end of this talk.
Look,
for me.
Come on. A little Eliza McLam night out at a concert is the least I can do for all the help over the last couple of years and in the year ahead. Keegan Matheson of MLB.com. Thanks so much for taking the time out, buddy.
You got it, my friend.
That's it for Jays Talk Plus today. We will be back Thursday, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet Television, all that great stuff as we tee up opening day We're almost there. We'll talk to you on Thursday.